Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films, John Lewis, Good Trouble, Flannery, and The Painted Bird. Hi, David. Are they good?
Well, you will find that out in a minute, Jill. How are you doing this week?
Cannot, will not, refuse to complain.
Excellent. Well, I'm speaking to you this particular time from Queechy, Vermont, where we have been visiting for the past few days, visiting my son who lives nearby. And we are going to be hitting the road soon. But even up here, I managed to look at a bunch of movies on the big screen. I mean on the flat screen, not on the theatrical screen. So yeah, the movie theaters are still mostly closed. But again, a lot of good stuff is streaming out there that you can access through your computer or your smart TV or however you access things. So I recommend, folks can still look at movies if they're in that mood. And today's three films, each one is actually pretty worthwhile, although not necessarily very exciting. The first one, especially John Lewis, Good Trouble, is on an extremely worthwhile topic, and everybody should watch it and learn from it. It's not a very interesting movie as a movie. And it is, of course, about the very, very great member of the House of Representatives for decades, John Lewis. And the film is called John Lewis, Good Trouble, because that's a term he liked to use. He was, of course, a civil rights activist and militant, and a really important one before he got involved into congressional politics. And he used to tell people, go out there and get into trouble, get into good trouble, by which he meant shake things up, get out there, raise a ruckus and do it, get yourself in trouble, but the kind of trouble that's going to accomplish something and it's going to make the world a better place. So get into good trouble. So it's a very nice title for this movie. And the film traces his career. By the way, I haven't even mentioned this yet. He actually died just as we're talking, two or three days ago. So this movie had already been out for a little while. So the movie's very, very well timed in that sense. I'm sure it will gain a much larger audience by people who very rightly get interested in his career, who might not have been so interested otherwise. And he was 80 when he died, and his career occupied most of his activism and political career occupied most of his life. So obviously he was doing this stuff for more than six decades. So a tremendous contributor to the American civil rights struggle, which of course is still very much going on. So there's a good deal of John Lewis talking into the camera and talking about his life and about the things that he did. And he's, again, it's hard to say how admirable he was, because he really was exceedingly so. And the movie certainly deals with him getting beat up along with other people on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Mississippi about a zillion years ago, when the civil rights struggle was in its it probably is its most struggling modern phase back in the 60s. And he was involved in sit-ins and all kinds of activism that was going on, and was a leader in that, and was very, very close to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and other leaders. And we certainly see a good deal of King footage in the movie. The movie covers Lewis's career from that up until his getting into politics and his his many activities and the many different causes he was involved with over the years, primarily, of course, being civil rights as a very longstanding member of Congress. The most interesting parts of the movie are is the archival footage, in my opinion. Some terrific footage of sit-ins and that sort of thing, and race riots and whatnot back in the 60s, when segregation was, of course, in large, huge portions of the United States, not something that you didn't talk about, but something that was right out in the public sphere all the time, and he was fighting very publicly against it. So there's some terrific archival footage, not only of people like Stokely Carmichael and Martin Luther King and so forth, and Lewis himself, but other people and just events that happened at the time. I wish there were more of that in the movie, because when the movie gets to modern day talking heads, it becomes less interesting. The movie was directed by Dawn Porter. It is a very conventional documentary, which is to say that on the level of movie making, it not only doesn't break any ground, it's actually pretty dull, but the subject is really interesting. And so, again, I really hope that people watch it because there's a lot to be learned from it. And it certainly encourages us to think about the roots, which are just a few decades ago, of so much of the trouble that is still going on race-wise in America today. Second movie that I want to talk about is a film called Flannery, and it is about one of my favorite authors, Flannery O'Connor. Again, we have a Georgia movie because she came out of Georgia and spent a very large part of her regrettably short life in Georgia. And she was a phenomenal writer, one of the great, great, great Southern writers of whom there are so many, including William Faulkner and various others, and one of the great Southern female writers of whom there have been quite a number. Another great favorite author of mine is Carson McCullers, also came out of the South, and there's certainly others as well. I just don't want to get into a list here. But Flannery O'Connor, her greatest work, in my opinion, was her novel Wise Blood, which is a total masterpiece. I just don't think it has a flaw. It was also made into a really, really good movie quite some time ago by John Huston, which I also very, very highly recommend to people. But her, actually, Flannery O'Connor's great medium was the short story. And she wrote an enormous number of really, really brilliant short stories. And she often when people talk about her work, she comes under that label of Southern Gothic, because her work tends to deal with the grotesque, with the freakish, with the stuff which can seem, even to people in the South and certainly to people in the North, pretty bizarre. And there's a quote from her, which has been said a lot lately, where she said, anything that comes out of the South is going to be called grotesque by the Northern leader, by the Northern reader, unless it is grotesque, in which case it is going to be called realistic. And I would say that I think that the Southern readers often look at it very much the same way. But she was just a remarkable writer. And she had a very unusual life, which is to say she always seemed to feel herself a real sort of outsider from the human scene. She said when she was a little girl, she had this, her sort of general attitude was, keep away from me or I'll bite you. And despite that sort of what we would call nowadays a tude, she was able to get herself an education and to decide very passionately that she wanted to become a writer, and she stuck to that resolution. The other really crucial thing about her was that she was profoundly religious. She was a deeply devout Roman Catholic. The first time I read her great novel, Wise Blood, I thought it was one of the funniest and most scathing attacks on religion I ever read. It took me a while before I started to learn that it was actually the work of a profound believer. And what she was writing about here was a protagonist, a young man he happens to be, although he has a woman's name, Hazel Motes is his name, a young man who is trying very hard to run away from God, and God keeps chasing him and won't let him alone. And that's basically what the novel is about. Anyway, not to get into that anymore, but she was profoundly religious, and this really underscored, or I should say underran or underpinned, practically everything that she wrote. There was always, almost always, maybe a religious dimension to it, even though, sort of expressed in fascinating and I often find hilarious and sometimes harrowing ways. So Flannery is a documentary about Flannery O'Connor. Once again, it is a very conventional documentary. There's nothing cinematically interested in it. It was directed by a team, Elizabeth Kaufman and Mark Bosco, and they don't bring any cinematic originality to the movie, but they definitely get Flannery O'Connor's life story told with the help of an enormous number of talking heads. There's Hilton Alves, who was a critic with The New Yorker, and there's Tommy Lee Jones. Can't figure out why he's in it. He's an actor, but he seems to respect her work a great deal. Conan O'Brien is in it. Alice Walker, another very great writer, and various others. So it has a very good long list of talking heads. But mainly it has a lot of really fascinating footage of Flannery O'Connor from back in her active years. A lot of black and white footage of her talking on TV or home movies of her hanging out with people around the family farm and stuff like that. Another great important fact of her life, and a regrettable one, is that she contracted lupus, which her father had died of. And she was very, very sick during a large part of her life, and she ultimately died of it herself altogether too young. But during her short life, she managed to produce an extraordinary body of short stories, all of which I've read. They're magnificent. And at least one really great novel, Wise Blood. And Flannery tells the story of Flannery O'Connor in a not very cinematically interesting way, but a very literarily interesting way. And I much enjoyed watching it. So I totally recommend it for anybody interested in Flannery O'Connor, in American literature, in the American South, etc. And finally, our last movie, The Painted Bird. The Painted Bird is directed by a Czech filmmaker, now from the Czech Republic, named Václav Marhul. And it is based on a very famous and very controversial novel by Jerzy Kaczynski. The novel's been around for a very long time. I only actually read it fairly recently myself. And I had always wondered, Kaczynski is probably best known by Americans for his novel Being There, on which a very, very good Peter Sellers was based many years ago. But The Painted Bird is based on a much more controversial novel by Jerzy Kaczynski. And it's basically the story of a boy. He's supposed to be somewhere probably around 10 years old. And this is all during the World War II years in Eastern Europe, although the exact locations are left undefined. So we just sort of get to imagine a generalized Eastern Europe. He is separated from his parents and he is scrambling for his life out in the rural countryside of Eastern Europe during the during World War II. And he comes under the control of a peasant who treats him rather roughly and others treat him rather roughly. And so he has to get away and kind of escape again. And he falls into the hands of another peasant who treats him very roughly. I'm not describing exactly the chronology of the movie. This is the sort of thing that happens. And all kinds of terrible things happen to him and to people around him, and he has to escape again. And then he falls into the hands of another peasant, and he is treated horrifically. And he has to escape again. And it proceeds that way through the whole novel. Every once in a while, he falls into the hands of Soviets or the hands of Nazis, because World War II is raging away. And there he generally gets treated pretty horrifically, too. And then at the end, there is, in fact, a glimmer of hope for the boy. So this is what the movie The Painted Bird represents. And I was not especially looking forward to The Painted Bird for a couple of reasons. Number one, I really think Kaczynski's novel, it has a political element to it, you know, a World War II element, an anti-fascist element. But it's basically a parade of horrors. One awful thing happens to this boy or to people around him or to animals around him for page after page after page. And I just found the whole thing really pretty pointless. I regard it as a trashy novel. So I thought, well, okay, now what about the movie? Well, the movie became pretty famous over the past couple of years when it started to show at film festivals before the pandemic, when there used to be film festivals. It got into the news for people storming for the exits after 5 minutes because of the horrors on the screen. So I thought, well, this is interesting. I wonder really how true to this sort of pointlessly horrific novel this movie actually is. Apparently, it's really, really upsetting a lot of viewers. Well, of course, I had to watch it, and now it is streaming, and you can get it on Amazon. And so I watched it. It's almost 3 hours long, and it's very, very close, not completely close, but very close to the novel in its overall shape and in the things that happen in it. We have this boy who's around 10 years old going through this parade of horrors. And yes, there are a lot of horrors. And if you made a list, there is an animal that gets burned, and there is a person who gets burned, and there is a person who gets devoured by rats, and there is a pedophilia scene, and there is a bestiality scene. But you know, pretty much any self-respecting American, even Hollywood horror movie, shows you things which are way more graphically portrayed. I found the movie to be, and this is going to sound kind of strange, because if you list the things that are actually in the content, it's horrifying, but the stuff isn't really shown very much. It's more implied, it's more suggested. And since the movie is more than 3 hours long, you know, there's a lot of time in between these horrific incidents. And the main thing about the movie that struck me is it's beautifully photographed. And by that, I don't just mean pretty, I mean really striking, visually compelling images, often with a great bleak sort of beauty to them when we're not happening to be going through one of these horrors at this particular moment. So like the novel, I found the movie a sort of a parade of pointless horrors. But unlike the novel, which I think is rather flatly crafted, not very interestingly written, the movie is beautifully shot, beautifully made. And in fact, it's been getting very, very good reviews by the majority of critics who actually sit through the thing. So I don't want to recommend it unless you feel you can take a lot of horror. But it's horror that has a certain point. It reminds us of the evils that go on in war and of the particular evils that went on during World War II. And it has, by the way, a very interesting cast with a lot of people in it, like Udo Kier and Julian Sands and Harvey Keitel and Stellan Skarsgård, all in very small roles, but it's well acted, it's beautifully shot, and so if you want a reminder of the horrors of war, The Painted Bird is a movie you could do a lot worse than have a look at. So that is my really sweeping around the globe story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you as ever, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films John Lewis, Good Trouble, Flannery, and The Painted Bird.